welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Thursday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Again, today is Thursday, January 21st, 2016, as this week is just blown by so fast.
This month has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, here we are, and here we are 21 days into January, and I think back to the last 3 weeks. So 3 weeks, if my math is correct, and I think it is. Let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, what have you done in the last 3 weeks? What have you done? It's a good picture.
Yeah. I'll copy it, save it, send it.
And I look back, and I look back at the last 3 weeks, and I dropped on my knees, because I'm thinking, you know, I've squandered so much time, because I have not utilized my time the way I could have, and that saddens me. And I ask you, I challenge everyone out there to use your time more efficiently. I really do. I'm attempting to make changes to capitalize on my time. But anyway, what I was talking about, somebody sent me an email saying, what are you talking about Coach Dave Dobmeier, Tennessee? Well, here's the deal. There was a pro-traditional marriage bill that was set to be considered by the Tennessee House Committee Wednesday. And the supporters of the traditional marriage bill gathered, and included in that gathering was Coach Dave Dobmeier. This is just interesting, okay? Because I'm reading, or I'm looking, I shouldn't say reading. I pulled up the new civilrightsmovement.com. I've never been to this website before. I don't know what it's all about, but I can tell just by the flavor. Supporters of anti-gay marriage bill rally in Tennessee say cost of tolerance is AIDS. Hate group rallies. Now listen to this. Hate group rallies outside Capitol before Wednesday hearing on Natural Defense of Marriage Act. Hate group. Now, I'm going to tell you, I know Coach Dobmeier. He ain't a hater. And the way this is written, supporters of the anti-gay marriage bill, anti-gay. No, it's pro-traditional marriage. If you want to say anything, it's anti-sodomite. Anyway, the extremist group, listen to this, and they talk about us in the alternative media or new media. They talk about us using, incendiary language, terms. The extremist group, the hate group. And then they make out the state lawmaker. They make him out to be some sort of whack job because, he said that God told him to file House Bill 1412, known as the Tennessee Defense of Natural Marriage Act, because same-sex marriage is wicked. Well, okay. Yeah, well, God told me to put my socks on and shoes on and pants on this morning and walk out of the house. Okay, look, the way this is all being twisted, but see, here's the key to this. The proponents of keeping things the way, the proponents of sodomite marriage say, look, it's going to cost us $8.5 billion annually to the state because we're not going to get matching funds. We're not going to get federal funds. So we can't possibly do this. It would bankrupt us. Well, no, because that's only half the equation. Where does that $8.5 billion come from? It comes from the citizens, the actual citizens of Tennessee. You see, that's why history and civics and government operation is no longer taught in our high schools, in our middle schools, and even our elementary schools, because they don't want you to know this. They only want you to see, hey, $8.5 billion is the potential cost if we pass this act. So we can't have that. And so then you've got these shills acting on behalf of, or ostensibly, for the people who are in favor of traditional marriage, saying, oh, we can't do this because, well, it's not the right time, not the right place, because it would cost all of us money and stuff from the federal government. Okay. this incendiary article with the incendiary speech is just beyond. I'm not going to even read this or reference it anymore. They're demonizing people. One guy, Alan Hoyle, demonizing this guy who said, "I swore an oath to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution says nothing about marriage. And a court can't decide on marriage. No judge can make a law. A judge cannot rule against the people. We're for natural marriage." Okay. And then going on, and this is perhaps a critical component of this. There's a guy by the name of Matt Truhella, I guess is how you pronounce his name. He is described as, and I quote, "a radical Christian preacher from Wisconsin."
So he's a Bible believing,
right? Christian. See, he wants, and here's why he's called a radical Christian preacher. It's got to give this website credit, because here's why. He one time signed a statement in defense of them, a murder of abortion providers. Now, that's not exactly the all right, anyway, he espouses a theory, and I guess this is the key component here, of interposition of the lesser magistrate, which really is the what this is when you talk about the interposition of the lesser magistrate, what you're saying is that elected officials have a godly duty, a sworn duty, to stand in the gap by defying court rulings that go against the divine law. Much like Greg Jackson when he comes on the air and says, any law or any court opinion that is against the precepts of the Holy Bible in our Judeo-Christian heritage is no law at all. Any law that goes against the normal, you know, state, or I should say the normal biblical concept of natural marriage, is no law at all, or no valid opinion. All right, that's the in the interposition of the lesser magistrate. What they're saying there is, we can stand up to the federal court, or stand up to the federal government and the Supreme Court, by saying, no, we're not going to accept this. We don't have to, and by constitutionally, they don't have to. So anyway, that's the big deal, and so many sides are being represented here and are involved in this, and even like the family council, which Dave Dobmeier was referring to, the family council, who's supposedly on our side, well, said, no, we can't do this, we can't do it. And I was trying to find exactly who he was talking about, and I can't right at the moment. I have these notes in my office. But the bottom line is this. Okay, we don't need people on our side to here it is right here, this guy. I know his face. Hang on a minute here. David Fowler, the president of the Family Action Council of Tennessee. He's a guy that let's see here. This guy right here. Yeah. He's the guy right here, I believe, that is the one that was behind the tanking of the bill. So there it is. Family Action. Did I say that right? Family Action Council of Tennessee.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So you know what? Trust few.
Want to thank Larry for the email update on the Baltic Dry Index. It's down to 355. If you remember, at the beginning of the week, we did a show with Steve Quayle and Ross Powell. Closed at 369. Looking at this from today, the perspective of today, as opposed to Monday, the 52-week range on Monday was a close of 1260 as a high and of 369 as a low. Today, the 52-week range is 1222 as a high and 355 as a low.
Historic low. I mean, this is as low as it's ever been since
1985. 1,000 in 1985, yeah.
1,148 to my recollection.
Okay. Well, so we have that continuing. And that is a measure of world trade. And Larry, in his email, adds that if In case you have not caught it, the Baltic Dry Index continues to plunge, and if it keeps up, stores will experience empty shelves due to lack of trade, another good reason to be prepared. And that is very true.
You know, the life or the society in which we live right now. Again, you go back to the East Coast, what is it, Snowmageddon or
Stormageddon or whatever you call it. Yeah, I got a story on that here.
Snowmageddon. Look at the shelves. Look at the picture on InfoWars. Look at the shelves. This is what you get when you exercise poor judgment or no judgment at all. And you don't, prepare. And you know, do not be a part of this. Don't get caught up in this. Now, to the people who live alone, and the people who are infirmed, and the people who don't have families, and the people who are listening to this broadcast right now,
don't have money.
Okay, look, let's just talk to you for a moment. All right, and we know people like this. We know people who are hurting and listening to this broadcast in a room lit by a single light bulb, for example. And you might think, well, geez, they have a computer, or they have got a smartphone, or they got some way to listen, so they're not that bad off. Well, no, I mean, but here's obviously faith comes in, but. I guess what I'm saying here is no one should be entrapped or engaged or ensnared in a spirit of fear. Don't be afraid. You shouldn't be afraid. If that's you, don't be afraid, because this is where faith comes in. This God, I believe this. Now again, I'm not a preacher, I'm not a minister, I'm just an investigator, but I do have faith, and I'm a Christian, and I believe that this is where your faith comes in. God is going to look at this, your situation, a lot differently than a guy with $1,000 in his pocket or dresser drawer, sock drawer, and the unwillingness to prepare.
Absolutely.
Okay, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge difference, a difference with an extreme distinction here to those who are saying, dear God, you know, I can't get out. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm alone. I don't have anybody. Or I can't drive. It's slippery. I don't have a car. Okay, yeah, faith comes in here.
Not to make fun of anybody, but maybe tomorrow when it comes time to get to work, I'll call up and say, you know, just too slippery.
Yeah, just meanwhile, kidding. I'll be, yeah, but see, that's when you should open up the couch in the office and sleep there. But you see, okay, so we have, so let's separate the, let's make sure we understand the faith aspect of it for those who are alone and infirmed and, you know, who are really, you know, who are really in a jam versus the individual who says, well, hey, look, I got the money and I got the ability, I've got everything, but you know what? God's going to get me through this. I do believe there's a distinction there. And when you do ask that to that latter person, I think you might be in for a surprise because, yeah, you've got faith, but you also have two arms, two legs that work, and a car that works, and the ability to take care of your own and your family and others. And by not doing so, you're no better than an infidel. And I believe that will be, you will be one of those that will be in that store situation saying, oh man, you know, going for the last package of expired ground beef. And if it even exists. So that's my message on this. So let's move on.
Well, some big breaking news here. This out of Fox News. In advance of big storm, New Jersey lifts licensing law for shoveling snow. Yes, you heard me correctly. Just days ahead of an expected blizzard on the East Coast, New Jersey has officially repealed a nonsensical rule banning the shoveling of snow without a license. Governor Chris Christie on Tuesday signed a bill making it legal for New Jersey residents to offer snow shoveling services without first registering with their town. Last year, two entrepreneurial teens going door to door offering to shovel snow for a small fee were stopped by local police, and the cops told the two boys they were not allowed to solicit business without a permit.
Yeah,
the license costs $450 and is good for a period of 180 days. The story made national headlines. State lawmakers began working on a solution after the story became nationwide news. But this was just one of 93 laws signed by Chris Christie this week, according to the governor's office. He vetoed 65 bills. But what does it say about the police state and nanny state mentality when you have governors and states saying you cannot shovel snow without a license? And I understand that the difference that they're making, saying you can't solicit door-to-door snow shoveling services without a license. But I mean, when I was a kid, we used to make money to go buy football cards and, you know.
Well, that's the difference between you and I, son. When I was a kid, the difference. When I was a kid, I was expected to shovel not just my own
neighbor's
home, because they were elderly, and you did it without the expectation of money.
Well, that's all good and well. When I was growing up, I got paid to shovel my grandma's and grandpa's driveway. Never got paid to shovel my own, but we would go around and shovel the, you know, different neighbors and make some money. And we used to go buy football cards. And that was, you know, just the way things were. You know, in the summertime it was mowing the grass. In the fall it was raking leaves.
That's right.
But to see that states, I mean, we see how the states have been cracking down, even with the lemonade stands, saying kids are not.
Well, there it is. And there's a bigger picture. There's that war now on the domestic front. It's war against small businesses. You see, we bring guests on and they talk about the larger picture, about the banks. I mean, when I say larger picture, I'm not talking about the aggregate. I'm talking about maybe the larger issues with banks and with credit unions with stocks and such. But even at this level, at the level of snow shoveling lemonade stands, this is the war for consolidation control.
Oh, yeah. And this is the last, I mean, there's not many other ventures where they can go from here to regulate. You know, this is where they do start consolidating.
That's right. That's right.
And making, you know, choices about what is going to be considered something that you do with the permission of and paying the fee of getting a license versus what will be illegal. I've heard it said once that, you know, licenses are basically you pay the state permission to do something that is illegal. That is what a license is. Just like as a private investigator license. If
That's
you
right.
were to take the practices of private investigation onto some random citizen, it would be considered stalking, harassment. You could get arrested, but if you have a license,
well, no, that's not entirely true. I understand understand that, but
I mean, it's illegal to drive if you don't have a license. So you have to go get a license in order to be able to drive, and then it's all, you know, legal.
Well, the bottom line, it's all an encroachment of our freedoms. Or
absolutely,
you know, yeah, so
absolutely. Other news,
Before you get into that, I just want to throw this out there because this is kind of a random piece of information.
Okay.
Kony, Joseph Kony, the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda.
Yeah, the guy who was slaughtered, the Kony 2012.
Exactly. Now, we know, okay, and I know InfoWars did a lot of exposés on this, and other agencies, other companies, and Alice did a lot of agencies on this. Joseph Kony, the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, Uganda, which is, I mean, this is truly a U.S. and Israeli-backed guerrilla force. All right. This, according to Richard Cottrell, the former European MP, journalist, and author of the book Gladio, NATO's Dagger at the Heart of Europe. Back in 2011, he wrote an article called African Ping Pong, U.S. Plays Both Sides in Uganda. All right. Well, this just coming out from a trial here, Joseph Kony's lords, if you will, army people, and I warn you, this is not what I'm about to say is not pretty. The commander ordered his men to, and I quote, cook and eat captured civilians, and use rape to train child fighters in Uganda. Dominic Ongwen, himself a child soldier, turned children into militants. No, terrorists. He was operating as a commander for Joseph Kony's rebel army. And a court heard the testimony, and this was would have been yesterday. They heard how he ordered his soldiers to cook and eat human flesh. This is through the International Criminal Court. He's facing war crime charges. And the reason this is important is because who in the world are we backing? Who are we backing? Who are we propping up?
When you say we, you mean the country?
No. Let me be better clear on this, because my wife even said, you know, you got to be very clear. The criminal elements of the global criminal globalist Luciferian elite within our governments, who are setting the agenda for the rogue elements within the CIA and other branches of our government, and the mercenaries, the NGOs that go into other countries and topple the governments and to do things like the Hillary Clinton-esque operations in Libya. Okay, those people, who are those people backing? Who are these bloodthirsty, bloodlust people backing? And they're backing guys like Kony. Witnesses tell how he instructed his personal escorts to administer dreadful beatings and even kill, cook, and eat civilians who had been abducted in attacks. And this guy, I mean, this is just crazy. This is just absolutely crazy. The reason I bring this up, war on all fronts. You see, we're exporting this kind of madness. What do you think we're going to reap? If we sow this, what will we reap? What will this country reap? We're already seeing it in terms of the mass invasion, alien invasion. And how many people are going to, and how many people are aware that the very people who Obama, and not just Obama, but Bush and Rubio and every one of these people who are singing Kumbaya and holding each other's hands and stroking their hair, patting their heads, saying it's okay, let's be tolerant of other societies. It's a humanitarian crisis. It is, but one of their own making. But how many people are we bringing into this country who are going to be doing just that? And you might think, oh, I can't imagine. I can't imagine for one minute that we're going to have this kind of result. You know, it's overblown. It's all fear. No. Look at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is to not just dilute our society, not just to rend our moral fabric, but the bigger picture here is to bring mercenaries in, bring soldiers in, and yet to terrorize your families and rape your wives and kill. And you know something? You might say, oh, that's all just a bunch of hokey BS. You know, that's not going to happen here. It's already happening. Look at Germany. Look at Sweden. Look at the other countries in Europe who are going through this. Joe, you've gone through stories. You've gone through articles of it. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. Okay, so 1 in 4 women in what was it, Sweden, have been raped. 1 in 4. And if, you know what, if your statistics are meaningless unless they happen to you, the statistics are, whatever, to get hit by lightning, that's good until your shoes are smoking on the floor, but here's the thing. Okay. Or you get a 1 in 10 chance of getting in a car accident or whatever the statistic might be. They're just numbers. They're numbers, and they're meaningless until it happens to you. But here's the deal. We are being set up for this. We are being set up to fight. We're going to have to fight. It's not a fight of our own choosing. It's going to come to your door. You're not going to have to go looking for it. It's going to come to you, and we're being set up to fight. Look at the Oscars. Will Smith and company.
His wife.
Yeah. What's her face? And then Aunt Vivian from, what was that show?
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, that show. Saying, Will, black dress, whatever her name was, doing this video.
Jada Pickett Smith.
Yeah.
Will Smith's wife.
Yeah. Saying, this is the, you're well, going against Will Smith and his wife for the wrong reasons, actually. But the bottom line here is, did you see how this is all shaping up? Did you see that when my DHS source back 3 years ago said they are attempting to cause racial riots? Look at, even in the Oscars now, it is either you comply or there's going to be a fight. Well, they want the latter, not the former. They don't want compliance. They want to fight. And see, it's coming. It's coming right now, whether it be on along racial lines or along lines of what's the word I'm looking for? The citizenship, aliens coming, illegal mass invasions of people from other countries coming in. They're looking for that fight, and they're looking as well as on religious lines. And not only that, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the insidious part of the religious aspect of it is they're also ripping apart the people within the church. And if you fall for that, you know, rending of the people within the church, and if you fall and engage in the fragging of your brethren, then I got to tell you something. You're part of the problem, not part of the solution, as Dave Dobmeier said, because that's how things in Tennessee get all screwed up. Dave Dobmeier goes down there. Hey, let's go for it. You know, bang, and then he gets fragged.
At the same time, though, and this has nothing to do with what Coach Dave's been going through, the church does need to be refined, and the people inside it do need, for the vast majority, at least, if you take into consideration the mega churches and Christian evangelical population in the U.S., they do need a refining, and some of them do need to be called out, not for, you know, their personal ways or actions, but people need to be convicted of their sin. They need to hear all sides of the message. They need to. We all need to be more open to the Holy Spirit and that Holy Spirit and the way He corrects us. And sometimes that's done through, brothers and sisters in the Lord coming to you individually and saying you got this wrong or that wrong. But that's. One of the emailers sent an email that makes a good point that, and this is Pam, I believe. She says, we are not going to win earthly moral wars, and I'll add, especially in the public arena.
We might not win all the earthly wars, but don't we have a divine obligation to fight?
She says it's not about fighting the wars, it's about fighting for souls.
And I would agree with her. But how do you fight? Okay. And see, this is all great, and I agree with her. But when you are living in the earthly, you are living here on terra firma earth, and I know that we are living in the, I mean, I know we're spiritual beings living here on the earth. You do have to fight on the earthly plane. I get that. I understand that. But my question is, okay, so you can sit back in your prayer closet and pray, or you can go out like Coach Dave Dobmeier is and attempting to change, you know, advancing your convictions, advancing your biblical
you said that
agenda.
Better.
Okay, right? I mean,
no, you're right.
Okay, so I understand that. I do understand the distinction, the difference. I get that. But we also have to... did you just do that?
Maybe.
I saw a flash of light go across my eyes.
Eric, can that ruin camera lenses?
Yeah, I wouldn't
if
be doing
I were,
that.
If I were to shine that into the lens?
Let's not try. I mean, yeah. There was a little red dot.
Red laser pointer on me that I play with.
We're not going to play
my
that.
Cats with, and I just
torment probably is the
just
word.
Messing with the guys in the studio.
Yeah,
now.
All right. There you go. Okay, go on.
I want to hit this article because the people that are being released out of this country are the ones that need to be. Continue to be kept, in some cases, under lock and key. The Obama administration releases Al-Qaeda's most skilled explosives expert. The Obama administration had released one of Al-Qaeda's most skilled explosive experts, a man personally praised by Osama bin Laden and who created a shoe bomb design that was used unsuccessfully to bring down an airliner in 2001. The Pentagon said on Thursday that Egyptian Tariq Mohammed Al Sawa, who may have known the September 11, 2001 plot, was transferred from the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay to the government of Bosnia. Now, this is one of many Guantanamo detainees who have been freed or released in recent weeks, months, and even years. Al-Swaha fought with the Bosnian army in the early 1990s and eventually made his way to Afghanistan in 2000. Like many other members of Al-Qaeda, he began his terrorism career as a member of the secretive Muslim Brotherhood, which is present in the U.S. Al-Swaha's Guantanamo file reveals a number of chronic medical issues. And, I don't know, what's up with the internet here? Just wiped off my screen. But this goes on to say that the, and even the leftist-leaning journalist, was her name Monica Crowley? She says that this, the Guantanamo Bay closing and detainee release is one of Obama's biggest, where's the exact quote here? I don't want to misquote her. Most dangerous betrayals of the country. That from Monica Crowley.
Right. And she's an author. And that's correct. I mean, we are either at, and see, this to me, war on all fronts, if we're fighting a war against the terrorists, not terrorism, but terrorists, because terrorism is a tactic, it's not an enemy.
Right.
Okay, so what we have to identify the enemy, and that to me is a shameful thing that was left by the predecessor, George W. Bush. He refused to identify the enemy who we are fighting. Well, who is the enemy? And it's
the enemy.
The front enemy, of course, the visual enemy, visible enemy would be the Muslims who said we're going to kill you. But we have to understand as well that those Muslims are a tool. Islam has been weaponized. Islam was weaponized during World War II.
The way we see genes being weaponized today and genetics.
That's correct. So, but when you don't identify the enemy, and ultimately the enemy is evil, the evil agenda, but when you don't identify the enemy, you've got a hard time fighting it, don't you? Because where do you aim your weapons? And certainly not inward. And weapons can be spiritual, they could be physical, but I'm just saying, you know, you've got to have a clear cut. Anyone who doesn't believe, for example, that Islam has been weaponized, you know, I'm sorry, but it has. And who did that? And we've gone over this and over this and over this. The Nazis during World War II did that extensively because they couldn't weaponize Christianity because they looked at Christianity as a wimpy religion. They looked at it as, I'm telling you, because Himmler looked at Christianity as a wimpy religion, but they looked at the Muslims as saying, hey, it's already pre-written in their book, the Quran and the Hadith. We can weaponize. We could use this to our advantage. And the Nazis actually used, in a couple of, countries, they had, what's a platoon, bigger than a platoon? Platoons of Muslim soldiers that they used. So they were able to weaponize Islam, much like Zbigniew Brzezinski weaponized Islam in Afghanistan against the Russians. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You notice how you said that it was already written in their books, like it was placed there for a time such as this to be weaponized.
And there it is. It was. It is.
Going through a book, Hellenism, the Conquest of Christianity. Reading in the introduction, it talks about, I don't have the book with me, the copywritten date was in 76, but it talks about how the enemy that would be created, basically how Islam was coming to arise of some kind of power of sorts over the rest of the world. And it alluded to this in the introduction of that book, which was very interesting. Switching gears here, just wanted to hit this back on the watching this snowpocalypse news and warnings being issued. The blizzard warning issued for DC, it says up to 30 inches. The mayor in DC requests help from the National Guard, and I'm reading the list of the headlines on the top left-hand side of Drudge. because at the bottom there's a real funny one, at least I find funny. They say, you know, AccuWeather Live, anxious shoppers ransack grocery stores. That's the what you already got into when the bread runs out and they show the shelves.
Right.
Well, this next headline had me laughing. DC drivers ditched cars and walked home after sitting in traffic for 5 hours from 1 inch of snow.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you talk about things that people can't tolerate, don't put up with now, and think are burdensome and a hindrance now, and they can't take. Just wait until the bad stuff really starts to come down the pipe. Where are you going to go when you can't escape the problems that are all around you?
That's a good point. And I think we have, again, let's take lessons from this. Really, let's take lessons from what's taking place here. Look at the pictures of the empty shelves. Let's learn from this and watch what other people do. Not you, the listening audience, because you already know what is, what you have, and you're already prepared. But what we need to do, I believe, is to take lessons from, watch what's going on here, and take notes, and take very precise notes. Look at which stores get emptied out first. If you're in that path where there's panic and fear, whether it is real or justified or not, in terms of the weather, Let's take notes, and this should be an exercise. Every one of you listening to this broadcast, especially if you're in that, and you can do this from afar as well. If you live in some other, on some other continent, you can do this, but watch carefully how quickly the stores get emptied out, when they get emptied out, who, look at the demographics of the people that are hitting the stores in terms of, you know, grabbing everything. Are they the yuppies, so to speak, or the young urban professionals? Or are they the more rural type? Or are they just poor people? Or are they a combination? Let's take notes on this, because this could very well be, as well, in addition to everything else, this could very well be, well, I can guarantee you this, the powers that are behind the powers are watching this as well and taking their own set of notes. So let's make sure that you and I, in this war on all fronts, take a lesson from this and take notes, and we will report back on to our findings, our perceptions as to how they, you know, how this all plays out. Let me go if I can.
I want to hit this real quick because we got a bunch of emails on this yesterday and today. Right. Researchers are pretty sure they found a new planet in our solar system.
I saw that.
The scientists who stripped Pluto of its planetary status helped discover it. Many are saying it's Nibiru or Planet X. And I'd say for good reason based on the mainstream articles we've seen out there, but I think there are other reasons behind this. And I'm not sure it's actually...
John Moore has a lot to say on this.
Yeah, and see, my problem is I'm not sure if it's actually a planet or if it's something that we were discussing more towards the beginning of the show, but they say now researchers are pretty certain that there is a ninth planet in our solar system. Two Caltech scientists say the new planet is about 10 times the mass of Earth and has an atmosphere of hydrogen and helium. Science magazine reports that the mysterious Planet X moves in a distant orbit beyond Neptune. The researchers haven't observed Planet X itself, but believe it exists because of the unique configuration of six objects when they come closest to the sun, according to science. The scientists say that there is a 0.007% probability that the configuration is due to chance, and instead are confident that there is a ninth planet. They believe that they will be able to observe the planet with a telescope within 5 years, that according to the Associated Press. So where did this possible planet come from? Scientists have previously speculated that there could be a missing planet in our solar system, with some theorizing that a collision caused it to be ejected out of our solar system some 4 billion years ago, that this collision may have been with Jupiter. Although we were initially quite skeptical that the planet could exist, as we continued to investigate its orbit and what it would mean for the outer solar system, we've become increasingly convinced that it is out there. Badigan said in a statement, there is solid evidence that the solar system's planetary consensus is incomplete. And that was one of the scientists that discovered it. But this discovery is also the second time that Brown has reshaped the way we think about the solar system. In 2005, he made a key discovery that allowed scientists to reclassify Pluto as a dwarf planet. apparently made a lot of people mad about that decision. But the big news again, researchers are pretty sure they've found the ninth planet of our solar system. Some say it's Nibiru, Planet X, but this is making its way around the scientific community and mainstream news. I've seen a lot of, we've gotten a lot of emails about this. A lot of attention is being focused on this. And next week we'll have to talk to Stan about it. But
yeah, well, John Moore had I received an email, and I'm not exactly 100% sure if this was public or not, but really there's one of two things that could be happening here. It could be definitely real, and it'll be, when I say real, legitimate, all right? No, okay. Or it could be... I don't have the email in front of me here, but I, in fact, when we come back from the break, I'll have it. But it's interesting how John Moore looks at this and saying, you know, wait a minute. Will these scientists, for example, you know, or these people who do the two who discovered this, will they be vilified from their findings and say, well, wait a minute, this is all just BS, or is it real? And then you know, will it be used as kind of a shall we say, some sort of other initiative or something else. There's something really not right with this mm-hmm. whole thing, I guess, is the bottom mm-hmm. line. There's something not right here.
No, again, definitely, I would agree.
We should get John on the program.
Because if there was any type of planet that had an oblong orbit, as they say this planet does, it would have had to come sometime in the past, and we are not taught in history about anything like that. You know, some stuff has come out in the recent past about Planet X and Nibiru and a possible connection to Wormwood, but I think it could be something completely different altogether, as we understand that we are in a three-dimensional matrix, if you will, and nothing is really what we perceive it to be, the way we perceive it to be, not in this world.
I think you meant multidimensional.
Oh goodness, what's his name? I just started working with Tom Horn. Josh Peck.
Right.
He wrote Quantum Creation, where he talks about, you know, intra-dimensional beings versus extra-dimensional beings, and the difference that people need to understand, you know, what they're dealing with as far as demons versus aliens. And this is what we started talking about the show, at least I mentioned about the coming Great Deception and a couple of different documentaries I was watching today. And I saw a Steve Quill clip, and it's about his new launching of the Gen 6
right.
productions and the documentaries he's going to be making. And he made a great comment that he said on our show. He says, are we seeing a repeat of ancient science instead of, you know, new technology being introduced to us today through the weaponizing of the genes? And you know, he went into, obviously what he talks about is his area of expertise is the genetic manipulation war that has been since the days of Noah and before the flood, and that coming back today. And we're not going to get into that now with 10 minutes left until the top of the hour, but something to definitely think about. Last article on weather, and then I'll throw it back to you. Hotter and hotter. NASA and NOAA claim hottest year despite evidence. The global warming propaganda knows no bounds. NASA and NOAA have just announced that 2015 is the hottest year on record, confirming a similar statement by the UN's IPCC last fall. A spurious claim that CNN and other elements of the pro-environmentalism establishment media are only too happy to amplify. In other words, two more government agencies funded entirely by government money have still found more evidence that more governments will be needed to avert the alleged man-made catastrophe of global warming. The fact that most proponents of man-made global warming are affiliated with either the UN or US government should arouse suspicion about scientific objectivity. Putting the lie to such pronouncements, as the New American noted only 2 days ago, is the absurd yet incessant claim that global temperature data that stretches all the way back to the 1880s, an era when high Arctic and Antarctic Siberian Sub-Saharan Africa, Central Asia, and large stretches of the ocean had not yet been explored, let alone equipped with weather monitoring facilities. Virtually nothing was known, for example, about the Arctic ice until airplanes gave access to areas unreachable by boat. And then they go on to say, yet we're expected to believe that data pre-1979 is as reliable as what is furnished now by satellites and sophisticated weather monitoring equipment over the past few decades. But anyways, aside from the actual numbers and the temperature data, NASA and NOAA are claiming last year was the hottest year on record. Aside from the facts. And they're allowed to do this. No punishment.
They're cooking the numbers.
Exactly.
They're cooking the books.
And they've openly admitted to doing it, and they've admitted how they do it.
Yep.
But where's the accountability? And who's going to call? I mean, wrote her book, you know, Green Gospel, and calls out the man-made global warming lie, you know, turns around and gets sued for it. But these people can take actual facts and change them, tell us they're changing the facts to a lie, then claim the lie is the truth and get away with it. I mean, that's the best example as I could sum up as how our world is today. I mean, just so, yes, you're being lied to. Not only are we lying to you, we're stealing from you, and we're going to do it right now, and you're going to accept it and like it. And if you don't, we're going to sue you. The next it's going to be, if you don't, we're going to kill you. And it's coming.
No, it is. You know, and yeah, it is. I do want to mention this before the top of the hour, and then we got a lot of more important news, additional important news to get into. But Obama, when you look at his, you know, people say, well, it's only 364 more days until he's out of office, 360, whatever, another year until he's out. Okay, that's presumably so, number one. Number two, the damage he's been doing and will continue to do, and this is something we had talked earlier about, the alien invasion, the invasion from other countries into this country. Well, one of the issues here, this is the lawlessness, and in the end of days, there will be increases of lawlessness. Well, we're seeing it right now. Obama is blatantly breaking the law, and this is coming from his own DHS advisor. You know that pesky little visa waiver program?
Mm-hmm.
Well, DHS the Homeland Security Committee Chairman Michael McCaul and Candace Miller is a rep as well, state that have gone on record saying Obama is breaking the law. More importantly, he's breaking his own law. Here's the deal, folks. Terrorist attacks in Paris happened. All right. Whether or not there was, you know, whatever, however they happened, it made the news. Well, all of a sudden, people here in the United States and the West were saying, hey, we can't have that here. Well, okay, what does Obama do in response? Well, here's what's going on and has been doing, I should say. What they are doing is they are their visa waiver program is being thrown to the wind. In other words, the Obama is blatantly going against all laws. In fact, one that he himself signed, all waivers announced by the White House were rejected by Congress. Now think about this, during negotiations with Obama and Congress. So Congress, in response to the Paris attacks, says, hey, we got to tighten these things up a little bit. And Obama says, yeah, okay. There's no difference of opinion over statutory interpretation of the law, this visa waiver program. It's a contradiction of the law and the agreement that was reached. Obama is putting his relationship with Iran, for example, in this case as well, Iran, ahead of the security of national security of our country. He's rewriting the law to appease countries like Iran, for example. He's overriding any will of Congress. And my comment to that is Congress has no will. Anyway, Congress has been frustrated with Obama's he offering exemptions or the Oval Office and the executive branch offering exemptions to people who travel to Syria, to Iraq, to Iran, to Sudan, for whatever reason. These waivers from security requirements were rejected during the negotiations between the Congress and Obama. And see, here's the problem. And this, the war on all fronts, we don't have an ally, any allies in Congress. You might think, oh, Trey Gowdy and all these other, oh yeah, they're good. But look, okay, Congress says, no, you can't do this, Obama. You can't offer exemptions to individuals who travel to these countries. Yet Obama, he says, oh yeah, I can. And what does Congress do? Nothing. When you even have the head of his own DHS saying, oh, wait a minute, we have a really bad problem here. They go to Congress and Congress comes back and says, well, yeah, I understand we got a problem, but hey, I'm sorry. What are we going to do? Obama has ignored Congress's wishes. And what does Congress do? Nothing. Nothing. So, okay. So where does this leave us here? Okay, because the Department of Justice has been compromised, has been captured. The Congress, all 535 of these idiots, should be recycled and put in the dustbin of history. The Supreme Court is a rogue outfit. You've got DHS that's at the beck and call of the Muslim Brotherhood. We are a captured operation from within. We are, you know, and people are saying, well, you should impeach who? Over what? Okay. And then you've got the establishment conservatives, the Rush Limbaughs and Sean Hannity's. Sorry, Rush and Sean. Sorry about this, but you know what? You could have put a stop to this back in 2008 when we were yipping that the allegiance of this renegade in chief was not to America. And then what do? You support along partisan lines people who are not going to do a damn thing, and you throw them in Congress. So anyone who out there who thinks that 2016, the election in November, is going to make a doggone bit of difference, I'm sorry, it's not going to make a bit of difference. And you know what? Look at the landscape, and I bring this up, look at the landscape of Germany in the 1930s. Americans were sick and tired. They were looking, and I want you to consider this heavily. Look at the landscape in pre-war, pre-Nazi Germany. The citizens of Germany were sick and tired of being bullied, and they were having a hard time. And they wanted hope and change. They wanted something different. Not hope and change. They wanted something different. They wanted somebody to take the reins and say, I'm going to fix everything. The Christians, especially the Christian church in pre-war, pre-Nazi Germany, asked for that. When I say asked for it, I mean they were asking for somebody strong to look out for the interests of the country as well as the Christians. And isn't this what we're seeing today? So and I know the examples between Nazis and Hitler and Germany and today. I know that's so overplayed. I understand that. But let me tell you something here. If there was ever a time in this nation's history where there could be, under the auspices of a savior coming in to bail us out, and think about this and think about this hard. We got a guy that's saying everything we want to hear, right? And I'm not saying he's wrong. Not at all. He's saying what we want to hear. Toss them, make sure you don't get, change, we can't let the Muslims in. You're right. But what happens, I'll pose this as a question. What happens when you put all of your spiritual, moral, social eggs in one basket? What happens when you look for that specific political solution or the solution of a man over morality, of a man over scripture? Think about that for a moment. In the current landscape, that's called the United States of America. Folks, we're right back. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.